The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. Head to gamefly.com/farbeyond for a free premium 30-day trial today.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 God, no else? That was okay. Awful. That's really, really bad.
It's
hey, everybody.
For the show.
Wow. Welcome, everybody, to Beyond, episode 531, I think. My name is Max Scoville. I'm joined by Miranda Sanchez.
That's me.
Jonathan Dornbush.
Oh, boy.
And Marty Sliva.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy. We have an episode in store for you today. If you're watching the video of this, you might see that Jonathan is wearing some sort of mouse-eared hooded sweatshirt, the sort of thing they would sell at a theme park.
But what kind of theme park?
Who knows? Well,
oh, well.
Miranda and Jonathan are here because there's been a huge, huge big drop of news about Kingdom Hearts. And we're going to talk about Kingdom Hearts.
Max is so excited.
I walked over this morning and I was like, hey, Brian, are you cool with not being on the show because we're talking about Kingdom Hearts? He's like, no, I really want to talk about Goofy and the Ren. He's like, and then after a second, I'm like, you're happy you're not on, right? He's like, yes, I am.
Dogs that stole a boy or whatever the game is about. I don't. Anyway, I will try to be very respectful in spite of it and its fan base scaring me. There's a bunch of games coming out this week. Marty also played some Ni No Kuni 2, yes. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But in the meantime, let's talk about what we've been playing. Miranda, you have been chipping away at Monster Hunter.
Finally.
Which,
I'm back to it.
This game is the fastest selling game in Capcom history, which is kind of nuts.
Congratulations. Yeah, rightly so, because I think the Monster Hunter series has been like really intriguing to me, and I'm sure a lot of other people too. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, I should play that someday. And you just never do, because it's like on a handheld, and like you're really invested in, like, I love my handheld, but 100-hour game, like, unless it's Pokemon, then it's really hard to just, like, know that I'm going to commit to this.
Yeah.
And having it on console with the option of, like, playing with friends and, like, kind of meeting up and exploring this awesome world together is just way more exciting than sitting 100 hours.
And having sort of this entire world that kind of works bigger on a better on a big screen. You know?
Yeah, especially like, just these gargantuan monsters more realized on this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, to me, like, Monster Hunter was, like, it's as big as it is because of Japan. Mm-hmm. Like, the handheld versions, the PSP versions, and the 3DS versions, like, were some of the biggest games in Japan. It's, like, easy to overlook that in America, but, like, that was, like, the way Americans think about Call of Duty are the way, like, Japan thinks about something like Monster Hunter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it coming finally to PS4 and Xbox One, to me, at least in our minds, it has graduated.
Yep.
Like, it is now, you see, 6 million units moved in less than a month, a couple weeks. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it is now in the same breath as those AAA games that we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also huge because it's a game that hinges so heavily on a
monster.
What is the mural? If you're watching our video show, for some reason, our footage of Monster Hunter just went into the settings. I don't know why.
Oh, you haven't gotten that far in the...
Yeah. Glad we captured that. Anyway.
That's our first minutes of the game clip? That's not great.
We should go address that later.
Yeah. So, great. Anyway, if you're listening to the audio version of this, I apologize. Just in general, I'm sorry.
Like, are you like are you playing with friends? Like,
no.
Have you done?
I'm playing offline entirely.
Oh, interesting.
Really? Yeah. Because okay, so I have this really dumb setup where I have one Ethernet cord going to my console and my PC, so I have to like switch which one. Mm. And Brian's been playing Dota. Surprise. Yeah. And so I've just been playing Monster Hunter offline.
Yeah.
Cuz I am too lazy to find another Ethernet
cord.
That's kind of nice. I just want to be alone sometimes.
You don't have wireless fireless? I don't know what Wi-Fi is.
Yeah, I think there's something weird with my Wi-Fi connection where it won't work well, like the NAT setting or something, and I just don't want to deal with it, guys. So I'm just playing offline for right now.
But you're enjoying it.
Yes.
So this isn't a thing. Like, to me, I played most of Destiny 2's campaign offline, and I loved it. And I was like, I don't need friends here.
Yeah, I played about my
don't need friends.
First,
you know, Miranda, you should probably get that Ethernet cable because there are over 6 million other people who you could be playing with.
That's too many people. Ooh,
I really want to play with all those.
It's a lot
people.
Of options.
Don't you want to communicate with strangers in the game with the meat?
The game with the meat. It is so weird.
When you put it that way, absolutely not.
It is so weird. Jumping into this game after reviewing Shadow of the Colossus and loving Shadow of the Colossus, and that is a game where you kill 16 things and you feel bad because you should feel bad about it. And then Monster Hunter is just like, you kill it and then it runs away and then it's bleeding and it's trying to hide, but I'm like, I'm going to skin you alive and wear you.
So yeah,
you're the Liam Neeson of Monster Hunters.
At first I felt bad when I played my demo at TGS because like that happened. And the monster itself wasn't very antagonistic. It was in the Wildfire Waste, I think. And it just kind of like rolls around the mud. It's kind of cute. And then I meet some of the more vicious monsters like in the beginning and I'm just like, no, you're going to die.
It just worries me. It's like all those like pictures of like Eric Trump with like a, and he like holds up like a rhino tusk. He's like, look what I did. I shot it.
Yeah. No, I mean like Shadow of the Colossus is like, I'm sorry, you beautiful beast. I have to make the blood shoot from your forehead, but it's for a good cause. And then Monster Hunter is like, yo, we broke one of its legs. Let's go hit it with our bagpipes. Let's kill it.
What have your weapons been?
Hunting horn and the bow and arrow.
Okay.
Which it's very different, but it's nice to kind of mix it up with the range. I found that I like the hunting horn, even though it's a support weapon technically. Like, it's an extra challenge to kind of do it by myself. Yeah, I gotta be independent. And
because of the Ethernet cable.
That's actually one of the downloadable weapons.
Also,
you can just
honestly,
whip it.
I don't want to play online yet because I just want to learn this game and not have to deal with talking to anybody else.
I'm finally going to jump into it. And I played the first hour or two, and Casey was talking a lot about how fun it is to play with friends, especially people who've known it, but I am very much like a solitary, single-player sort of focused person, so I like the idea that it's still good in that form.
Yeah, so it's just like, I just want to get through this a little bit by myself, kind of get some good armor. My armor right now is embarrassing. I don't want anybody to see me or my Palico because we do not match.
Oh.
So...
That's really more
pelts. That's really the.
I mean, it's
big thing.
I mean, granted, you usually match peppers. Like, you guys have a similar thing.
You guys get haircuts on the same.
Yeah, we're like the same. Me and my dog are like the same dude. I actually made when I briefly played Monster Hunter. I spent a little while trying to make my cat, who I don't really like that much because I think she's senile or something. Which she's really. She's like really. She bit my friend the other day. She's become violent.
No.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, I was like, I don't want this cat hanging out with me that much. I'm just gonna leave it at camp.
No.
I don't know. You give me like a little dog, I'd be all about it.
No, I'm just so excited they have cats because they always have dogs.
Do they? I mean,
almost every game has a dog as companion.
Why can't you choose? You should be able
because you can have a cat for once.
What about a car? What about like a little car? That
that's Final Fantasy.
Just a sentient car.
I mean, that's car. That's
true.
You have a car companion.
Yes, my pet regalia.
Yeah, I mean, you could. I put wings on it, and now flies. Yeah.
Beautiful pet Cadillac Escalade.
I'm enjoying it a ton. I'll play online eventually, but.
Cool.
Yeah, it's been great.
I'm excited. It came out with a good time. Like, I'm excited to like chip away at that for the rest of February and you know, before stuff like Far Cry comes out.
Nice. Jonathan, you've been playing a game called Iconoclast, which we touched on very briefly for a moment last week, I think.
Yeah, so Iconoclast, it is a like 2D style platformer, which, you know, there are a ton of them these days, but this one's really cool in terms of, I think its story is the most fascinating part for me, because the whole world that you're exploring has this weird religious overtone to it. Essentially, like, the world is controlled by this...
It looks like Maple Story. I'm not really getting a religious
It's deceiving because it's more in the when you're interacting with characters. Like, this is the very beginning of the game where you're just learning how to handle your main character's combat. She later finds a wrench that adds into the platforming, so you'll be able to like hop around more, find new locations. A lot of the world has machinery in it because you're you are a like repair woman, but you're not allowed to repair things that the government does not approve you of repairing. Ooh. Essentially. Huh. So you're going around sort of doing that for other citizens who need it. Mm-hmm. It's this really interesting sort of blend of just like really awesome, satisfying platforming, but also the story that I did not expect. And I've been enjoying it so far. I'm only a few hours in.
Yeah, a lot of people I know who've played a ton of it compare it not in mechanically to Celeste, but Celeste in the way that it is. On its surface, this game is like a really good sort of, you're going to see here, this is almost like a Mega Man-esque boss.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like a Metroidvania Mega Man platformer. But then if you dig into it, it becomes an actual deep, interesting story. Like how Celeste is like a super tough meat boy, but that also has a story about depression and anxiety and everything.
There's a surprising bits of allegory in it. I know there's one scene sort of early on that has you actually interacting or sort of avoiding the cops of this world.
Oh.
That plays into an interesting, like, the cops are having a very sexist discussion and sort of like a play on how these like gross, dirty cops, you're having to avoid them. And like you as a woman.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yes, I didn't expect that in the first few minutes. I know there's been some sort of discussion about how it does or doesn't handle that scene. But just the fact that this sort of game has that discussion happening, like, super exciting to me.
That's interesting. Also, the idea, are the cops like, are they bad guys exactly, or are they just kind of...
Well, the game opens up with like pretty much the cops come to your house.
Yeah, the cops come to your house, and that's pretty much the beginning of the game. So they are in service of this larger like religious sect, but it's sort of like a militaristic religion.
Like when we think of like indie games with stories, it's always like something like Gone Home or something like That Dragon Cancer, where it's like in order to say something, you need to be this type of indie game.
Yeah.
But I like that stuff like this and Celeste, and I guess even like 10 years ago, Braid is like, no, you can tell a smart, interesting, thoughtful story, but then also have a cool retro-inspired platformer.
Undertale's pretty cool.
Undertale, exactly. Undertale. Exactly. Yeah. Where it's not like you're able to tell an important story, but then it's like you're in the guise of like an old school RPG.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, on that note, I've been playing Crossing Souls a little bit, which is it's a, I'd say, 16-bit-ish style game. I actually first saw this at E3 2015, and I wouldn't shut up about it. And everyone was like, what are the big, huge AAA games we saw? And I was like, I saw an indie game about the 80s. It's at the Devolver Digital booth. But no, this is weirdly like a very personal game for me. When I was a kid, my friends and I would just obsess over like our dream game, which was, you know, kind of like, oh, what if they made a game about us? You know, like a game about small town kids getting in adventures. But oh no, there's also a dark world. And that's this game. Like this game is like weirdly kind of like that whole sort of collective unconscious tapping into it. It's weird playing it now because it's got a lot of Stranger Things vibes, mm-hmm. but this was in the works way before we knew what that was.
Yeah.
It was kickstarted in 2014, and the kind of moment-to-moment gameplay is you play as a group of friends, a la, you know, Stranger Things or Stand By Me or It or whatever, and then one of them winds up sort of stuck in he becomes a ghost. He gets stuck in this sort of like other realm, and you switch between them, and they all have kind of different abilities, so there's this almost sort of almost Metroidvania aspect, but it's all sort of unlocked at once. So it's more like you solve puzzles and, you know, certain combat stuff requires different skill sets. I'm a couple hours in, maybe a little bit of the ways in, and it's got some pretty sharp difficulty spikes. Mm-hmm. It leans very heavily on kind of retro gameplay. And I sort of wish that they'd, I don't know, nerfed a little bit just so I could play through the story. It's got cutscenes that are done in like a Saturday morning cartoon style, which is really cool. Cause I feel like back then, back in, you know, kind of Super Nintendo times, like getting to a part where it shows you a video, you're like, ooh, it's a special treat, you know, mm-hmm. Like playing a game like Final Fantasy VII or something. You're like, oh, it's time for the cutscene.
Yeah.
And that very much kind of taps into that where you're like, oh, this isn't like just more gameplay. This is, you know,
this is showing me like another look at these characters.
And it's got a lot of kind of pop culture references, and it's overall, I really like it. I'm kind of stuck on this one boss fight. It's becoming very frustrating. I got very angry at it last night, but it's really gorgeous, really charming. And they've I'm also looking at what I've seen in the game so far and what they've shown in trailers. I think this might be like a surprisingly deep game in terms of how long it goes on. And I mean, the story seems very sort of you know, kind of Saturday morning cartoon like Goonies adventure nonsense, but you know, they obviously put a lot of effort into it. So it's, you know, it's not like it's not going to go into, you know, serious issues like anxiety, but they clearly have their world built, which is nice. Yeah.
It certainly looks neat.
Yeah, I'm excited to play a lot more of it.
Yeah, I dig it. That's coming out this week.
That's totally one of those games, and honestly, Iconoclast is the same thing where it's like been in development forever. Like Iconoclast has been like pretty much a passion project for six, seven years, something insane like that. And so I don't know. It's always cool to finally see those things come out in the wild, which was like the same thing with Gorogoa, which came out earlier this year, which was just in development forever. So
yeah. Let's see. We also got also this week there's new Call of Duty Zombies DLC.
Yeah, that's been out for a little bit now. It's been fun. I reviewed it. It's like a 7.7, I think. I gave the DLC pack as a whole. I like the new maps a lot because they add just a little bit more variety to the suite of multiplayer that we already have. And Zombies itself, I like a lot. I guess some of the community isn't super into the map itself, but I found it to be pretty challenging and interesting. So
I really like the fact that it's I keep walking by people's desks and I'm like, oh, is this D-Day? And then I'm like, no, there's zombies everywhere.
Yeah, you're just
like,
on an island where they did a lot of experiments. I think it was like bunker or like they had so the thing with zombies is it's so hard to know what's going on in the story because you're just trying
worried
to not
about
die.
Not dying from
yeah, it's like, yeah I'm trying to yell at my teammate to help me unlock this thing and not die and they're like let's talk about the lore and I'm like I can't hear you right now
yeah
so it's like one of those things you go back and like read later
so
there's the puzzles in this one are actually really hard too. Oh no, the guy on the left, get on the left. Anyway, we're watching gameplay and it just bothers me like crazy. I'm like, why did you jump on that? You saw a person next to you. Anyway.
cool. Do you think this is like worth, if anybody sort of, you know, had this and maybe had the season pass or they've just sort of dropped off the game, do you think it's worth kind of jumping back in for? Or is it
Sure. Yeah. So right now they have, or Call of Duty World War II has a nice event going alongside it as well. So it's free for anybody who has the game.
That's cool.
Oh,
cool.
It's called The Resistance Surprise because it's also the Resistance DLC. So the event itself is to celebrate the new Resistance class, which is available to everybody. You get like weekly care or supply drops, which is really nice because they come with special stuff that's only available during the event. And they have a special playlist for these new maps. So if you have like a map pack or something, then you could just play those on loop, which I highly recommend doing because the maps are very good. One of them is a remake from a Modern Warfare 3 map as well.
Nice.
Do you think we're ever going to get a new Resistance game? Remember The Fall of Man?
The Return of Man.
I don't think Insomniac's ever going to make a Resistance game again. No. They're making Spider-Man's.
Yeah.
No, they got other things to do.
Chimera.
Let's see. Marty.
Yes. I'm going to talk about a pretentious game for 1 minute and then I'm going to stop. iOS game.
O'clock. This is what is the iOS? That's the...
that's the internet online service.
Right.
No. There's a new iOS phone game called Florence that is out this week and it's published by...
and the machine.
God. It's published by Annapurna, who did What Remains of Edith Finch and Goragoa, and Annapurna also publishes a bunch of really cool movies. So they're getting into games like this. It's created by Ken Wong, who was the creative director on the original Monument Valley, which is probably one of the best iOS games ever made. But it is the closest thing to like 500 Days of Summer, the game I've ever played. It tells a relationship and it's not mechanically, you're not doing anything. Like you can't lose in this game. You're not going to, it's not going to like beat you over the head with challenge, but it's about this girl named Florence and she falls in love with a boy and how their relationship has ups and downs. And like, there's a mechanic where you get into an argument with your character, with each other. Like a couple gets into an argument at a grocery store. You don't see what they're saying, but it's sort of this puzzle game to see how quickly you can put together your sentence as a rebuttal. And it ends up, the argument ends up being either you put together the puzzle super quickly and you're arguing against them and he goes home angry, or like the opposite, to where it's like sort of a back and forth. And then afterwards you're like, well, we can make this up because we both have sort of heard each other's sides.
And is that out now?
It is out this week. So it's probably out. Yeah. It's a great game for Valentine's Day if you want to feel
it. Man, yeah. That sounds like the most Marty Sleva ass game I've heard about.
Very good.
Since that one about the bar crawl in hell or whatever.
Yeah. That's also coming out next year. I'm very excited for that one as well.
Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. It has gotten increasingly difficult to try games before you buy them, but Gamefly lets you take your pick from a library of over 9,000 titles, including the biggest new releases like Assassin's Creed Origins, Call of Duty World War II, NBA 2K18, Madden 18, and many, many more. Gamefly will ship these games to you, and you can keep them as long as you want. There are no late fees or due dates, and shipping is always free. This breaks down to as little as 54 cents a day, which is a lot cheaper than dropping $60 on a brand new game that you can't stand playing. Plus, you don't even have to leave the house. Oh, and they rent movies, too. Normally, a Gamefly trial only lets you check out one game at a time, but if you head to gamefly.com/farbeyond, you can sign up for a free premium 30-day trial that lets you check out two games or movies at a time. Try it out today, again, at gamefly.com/farbeyond.
Well, speaking of games that are coming out this week, obviously there's Crossing Souls. There is Florence, which Marty just mentioned. One game I've had my eye on, but I haven't had a chance to actually check out, is Kingdom Come Deliverance. Are you guys hip on this one?
I'm interested in the same way. I haven't gotten a chance to play it, but I'd like to see more of it.
So this one is, it's like a it's a medieval RPG.
Yeah.
No fantasy.
It's Skyrim, hold the dragons.
Yeah.
Yes. I need a ghost though. I need like some ghosts.
There's no ghosts.
I'm like,
there might be one.
I'm kind of into this because I've been really digging on like history lately and reading a lot of books and stuff.
Nerd.
And like, yeah, right. And I'm like, oh, it turns out everyone had cholera. Isn't that scary? Where are the games about that? And like, this sounds like. Like, I don't know, like terrible feudalism times. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious about this. Also, I guess you get to be like a, I don't know, like a blacksmith's apprentice.
We did a Let's Play, and within 15 minutes, I swung a punch at a man and missed him, and then the medieval cops arrested me.
Ooh.
And then the jail burned down, and I died, and I got game over.
So how while I was in jail, how did the jail burn down?
Because like marauders came.
Did they try to arrest a fire? Like,
it was just, I thought, so like I got put in jail, and then a fire started, and I was like, oh, this will be like the inciting incident. Like the marauders came, and the jail burns down, but I'm able to escape, and then I have to like avenge my town. And no, I burned to death, and I got game over.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's been my story.
Well, fortunate.
They seem to be kind of from that school of thought of like there's very much the old school pen and paper RPG where it's like if you choose a path, you will continue on that path until there is an end there. You know, like really giving you. And I'm like kind of into that. You know.
Yeah.
Which is I don't know, like the idea that like maybe you just get like a bad ending and you're like, oh, okay.
That's well, my. I like to think that the game canonically ends with your character dying in a fire because he's drunkenly swung a punch at a man.
Yeah.
It checks out. Yeah.
Comeuppance.
Yeah. Also, this week is Faye.
Yeah, Faye. I'm really excited for this one.
Me too.
This is the EA original starring like cute little fox man.
It's so bad for like a cute little indie game that happens to be published by EA because it's just like...
But the cool thing with EA...
Hitler painted another landscape.
...is that we found out that with EA originals, EA makes zero profit. So EA will fund the game and then they'll get their money back to zero. And then all the rest of the money goes to the developer.
Yeah.
So EA makes no money off
They actually talked about it a little bit on an earnings call last year about
I
how...
I think they'd want to talk about that...
More
otherwise,
yeah, you would think, but yeah, what they say for them, it is more of a like passion project, like critical reception thing, so that like the longevity of the company can be seen as also focusing on like quality titles and not just making.
Well, so they do know they have a reputation.
Probably, I mean that's not the exact
very
point,
aware, probably.
But yeah, this is like the cute fox sort of Zelda-esque game where you're running around the forest and like learning songs and language instead of getting like hookshots and boomerangs.
Huh?
Who needs hookshots and boomerangs when you have songs and language?
Some animal friends?
Animal friends.
Yeah. Deer?
This looked very like a 3D kind of Ori in the Blind Forest.
Yeah, totally.
Is that kind of...
Yeah, I think it's more... It's more think of like open world Zelda-ish.
Okay.
Alana played a couple hours of it and really liked it. But yeah, the original is this, and then Way Out is coming in March.
That's the one I'm
that's
excited
the cool
about.
Like co-op.
Yay,
co-op cop busting game. Yeah. Seems cool. And then Unravel 2 is coming.
Crooks in Trouble.
Yeah.
Also out this week is the Secret of Mana remake. Mana, whatever. I said
it's
Mana.
No way of knowing.
Yeah, no one said anything out loud in games in 1995 when the first one
the
came
first
out.
The first one's it's the first A is silent, so it's Mana.
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 Mana. But no, this is actually I always loved the sort of the spin-off of this game, which was the Secret of Evermore, but that wouldn't exist without Secret of Mana, which was of course like Seiken Densetsu 2 or something. So it's one of those games that got a strange, out of order localization by Squaresoft, as it was known back in the day. I love this game though. I have like a lot of kind of deep rooted nostalgia for like the sounds and the colors and stuff. So
I agree. I am worried because this game has that sort of like fat chibification. I don't know how far I like how this looks. If you're watching the video version right now, like the first game looks so, like so many Super Nintendo games, looks so perfect because like, the sprite work is so great. And the animation's amazing. And the colors.
I love how maybe the point of that design back then was to actually make things that looked as close to that as possible.
Yeah. So maybe this is good. But from what I played the opening and it plays so similarly to what the original played like. And it opens with this thing, you fall off the log and then you get your sword and then you go into that, you fall into the hole and have to fight that weird bug. And so like it plays like the original. I don't know. I like the original a lot. I'm definitely going to check this out.
Yeah,
the man's not moving. He's
going to hear that music. Is it still coming to Vita? Do we know about that?
Some games are still coming to Vita, so possibly.
Impossible.
Yeah. I saw a Vita thing somewhere.
Oh, the Persona games. Dancing games are coming to Vita.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they?
Right?
Did
make that up?
Did I lie?
Isn't one of them?
If
I lied,
the original
I'm sorry.
One was, but I don't think those.
Oh, no.
Sorry, Andrew.
That might just be in Japan, which is probably why Andrew's there right now. Oh, hello. I heard there's Persona games over here on Vita. But no, it's a pretty good week. It was weird. The morning meeting today, Sam Claiborne, who usually gets up in front of the room and talks about what's coming out, was like, it's like a B-plus week for games. We're like, all right, are we doing that now? We're just reviewing each game's releases?
We're reviewing each week.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's much faster than reviewing each game. So
yeah.
No, that's cool. I'm down to check some of these out. Now, Let's get down to business, ladies and gentlemen. It is time to talk about Kingdom Hearts 3. Literally
hey,
anyone else.
This is what you talk about.
Hey, everyone.
Do it.
How's it going?
Why are we talking about Kingdom Hearts 3?
We're talking about Kingdom Hearts 3 because at D23 Japan 2018, at 11 p.m. on a Friday here, they decided to drop two new Kingdom Hearts trailers. One of them showcasing the Monsters, Inc. world, which is the second Pixar world to ever be in a Kingdom Hearts game. Also, there were a lot of leaks that a Monsters, Inc. World might be in the game. Following that, there was also a second trailer that showed off Utada Hikaru's new theme song for the game, Oath / Times Like These, which is the name of a Foo Fighters song. So I don't love that. I'm not a fan of that happening. But the second trailer also showed that. And just like a ton of surprising story details. It didn't like completely change my perspective of what this game is going to be or anything, but there's a lot buried in those trailers.
Also 2018.
Yes. Also still.
Also it still says 2018.
And according to reports from, it was part of this big panel, apparently they are saying the release date will be shown at E3.
Wow.
Yes. Is the other reports of like translation, so something could be wrong.
Yeah.
Put it on the wiki.
Yeah. Yeah. Put it in the wiki.
Yeah.
So yeah, you were talking, one big thing is we see this man. Who's this man?
This pink-haired man is Marluxia.
Okay.
Who you would only know if you played Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories on the Game Boy Advance or Kingdom Hearts Re Chain of Memories on the PS2.
So if anyone thought I could jump into this right now, or I could just play Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 and then jump into this game and understand what's going on,
I think you're wrong. Yeah. Like, my thing is this trailer with the beginning and the ending as well as a piece in the second trailer, I think it shows more than so than ever that you need to have played or have some base understanding of the story of the franchise so far.
That's why they waited so long to put this out.
Yes.
So you play every other game they have.
And that's why they re-released them all on PS4. Again, they have the 1.5 and 2.5s now together. There's 2.8. There's all of these things. And they were like, hey, you should probably play these because Tetsuya Nomura has even talked about how the game is just going to go. Like, they're not going to do a big preamble and slowly roll you into the game. They're just jumping in. And there is a scene from 2.8 that basically is that scene that pre-rolls you into 3.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, this is something that's always been odd to me is that, I mean, and I'm sure that I'm saying something wrong here, but Disney stuff, Disney properties are some of possibly the most like accessible IPs ever.
Yeah.
Like they're made, they're children's movies at, you know, for all ages, obviously. But like there are things you're like, what's going on here? Oh, that's a princess, or oh, that's a duck, you know? Like they're very, very basic and very easy to kind of figure out what's going on there. So it seems really odd to pair that level of accessibility with a game that has like, you know, 2.8 as a sequel number.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's at this point, it seems like a weird combination. I think back in the beginning, when that relationship first started, it was more of like a strange oddity of, what could happen here? And I still think the story of Kingdom Hearts 1 is pretty manageable to explain to anyone who has no understanding of this franchise. Yeah. I think you can explain the story of 1 pretty easily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But as it has gone on, they've just layered so much of the original story onto it that the Disney part is what accentuates it, what gives it sort of flavor and character and everything, but the story itself is so much tied into the original characters and everything.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on the fact that of the handful of worlds we've seen so far, two of them have been of Pixar movies?
Yeah.
And specifically Monsters, Inc.
Yeah. Well, so I'm glad that they have Pixar because when 2 came out, like, Disney hadn't acquired Pixar.
Yeah.
So this is their first like mainline entry to get those worlds, and I'm really excited about that because it would have felt like a cheat if Toy Story had debuted maybe in like the 3DS game or like the PSP game. Like, it wouldn't have felt the same gravitas to it. And I love that, especially because 3's focus is on, these are big worlds. There are fewer worlds in 3, but they are a much bigger scale. And I think that's playing into, like, that's why it's so exciting to see so many new franchises included in the series. So I love Toy Story. Toy Story is one of my favorite childhood movies of all time. Still one of my favorite animated movies.
What about Monsters, Inc.?
I'm less of a huge fan of Monsters, Inc. I think there's really cool stuff in the first movie and, like, a lot of inventive stuff. I still love Sully and Mike. I really hope they somehow make Mike hard to see in, like, all of the cutscenes. I hope he's just out of frame or stuff like that. But I really want them to use the doors that are sort of key to the mythology of Monsters, Inc., of allowing you to transport to different areas, just because I feel like that's so much to the spirit of that world, that I want to see that a little more in there. And obviously, they didn't want to spoil everything in this trailer.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they've showed us very little of that world, like saying that they're so expansive, but we saw like 3 places, maybe like just outside of the factory, like that main factory area where they work for the doors, and then the door area itself.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
So there's a lot of potential there.
And those rooms are big, but we've only seen a couple locales from it.
And then we finally get to see Rapunzel. Like, we knew there was a Tangled World since
2015.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we finally get to see Rapunzel in action, which seems like it almost seems non-triumphant.
Sure, yeah, because she and Flynn Rider just pop up in the middle of the trailer. Yeah. And the funny thing was there were reports from the panel afterwards that was part of this, and Nomura was saying that it was because Rapunzel's hair was so difficult to animate that as it was going on, it would get like stuck in the geometry or just randomly float up to the air. Like they were just having issues with programming. And that's
the thing
they
is that
off.
She just has lots of hair.
Yeah. Yep.
Like that is Rapunzel's thing.
You'd think if you're integrating that movie into it, yeah, you'd want to make the hair
challenge.
This movie's really odd, or this game's really odd to me because it seems like it's pulling from a lot of not... Like, I'm not really the target audience, but not really hit Disney movies?
So they are hits, but they're newer hits. It's...
Is it? Yeah.
Also older a little bit, too? Because, like, Tangled feels like it was a very long time ago.
It's before 2010, after. It's but around 2009, 2010, I think.
Yeah.
But I think the big thing is, like, we were talking about this earlier. I think it feels like, between 1 and 2 and then all the offshoots, they've used a vast majority of classic Disney movies.
Yeah.
Like, aside from, like, Robin Hood, I think they've, like, almost used, like, everything you could think of.
Several times.
Yeah, several times. And it almost seems like with this game that they're, you know, Disney does that thing where they close the door on the vault and they're like, we're gonna put a gun to Dumbo's head and we're gonna kill the elephant. You don't buy him in the next week. But it seems like they're almost closing the door on the vault to classic Disney. And we saw a little bit, like, Ariel's a summon this time around and not, like, a core character in Atlantis. And so it seems like they're kind of, you know, putting the past behind them and then focusing on the present slash future with stuff.
Have they confirmed Frozen?
No.
Is that too new?
No.
No. Because
Big Hero 6 is in it.
Yeah. Those are a couple crazy things. They have not shown any gameplay of Big Hero 6. They've shown one piece of concept art with Dark Baymax, but that is all they have shown from that world. And my thing is, so the thing about the Tangled world, also in that panel, they showed the village from that movie and it's alive with a bunch of NPCs, which is sort of the first time they've done that in a Kingdom Hearts game. Like, it looks like a living, breathing town.
This is such an insane pile of stuff going on here.
Yeah,
it feels.
Yeah.
I mean, the Toy Story being there.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Toy Story being within that is just such a. It's endless. It's like fractals. It's Toy Story is like, oh, here's a bunch of things that don't really fit together in a universe where other things don't really fit together.
Yeah,
and you're
yeah.
stacking more and more on top of that.
It's just,
and then Big Hero 6 is like 1 foot in Marvel.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
What the hell?
It's crazy.
Disney.
But yeah. They own everything now. There better be a Muppet summon in this game.
Oh my God, I want a Muppet summon.
I want Kermit to appear in battle.
Just on his little bog, sipping tea and playing his banjo.
And the rainbow comes out and just shoots a bunch of Heartless.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know if I can handle that.
Yeah. Right. Do you legitimately think this year?
My gut tells me it'll be delayed to 2019, even if they come out with a release date. If they say, like, September 29th, 2018, whatever day, the end of September, they say, I feel like I could see it being pushed into 2019. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping against hope, because I feel like, Disney continues to get bigger and bigger, and there's just never been a better time to release, like, such a big Disney game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to see it come out this year, for sure. And I think there's a good chance. Mm-hmm. Because they wouldn't have shown as much as they've shown, I think, if it was not closer to completion. And Nomura even talked about that in the panel from the translations I've seen. He was like, the first third, or someone did, of like the first third or 90% done, the middle third's like 60 to 70% done, then the last third we're not talking about yet. So
that means that game's not coming out in September.
I know.
That's how video games work.
Unless they go really fast on
that.
But yeah.
Jonathan, I got to ask. I know you're a chipper fella.
Yes.
You tend to perk up when things that you're interested in come into conversation.
It happens.
How have you sustained excitement for Kingdom Hearts 3? Like, how are you not like, wake me up when it's out? At
I think since they've gotten the ball rolling in the last year or two of like really showing you things, that's gotten my excitement back up. There were a few years in the beginning where I was just like, okay, whatever. We'll get these side games. Some are great, some are not, and we'll deal with it as we go. But I think the thing that has kept me going is just my initial love of the franchise. And to get very personal for a second, what I love about the first game is all about Sora discovering the power of friendship. And all of that. And it seems like a very silly, like, childlike thing to say is why it's important. But as someone who grew up and, like, my friends have been my family for most of my life, that, like, moment still resonates with me so much and I think carries through what this franchise is about. And so even when it gets all convoluted with all these people and they're nobodies forming and then they're also heartless and then there are three different types of enemy types
there's
you don't even know about.
In your heart?
Exactly. There's someone in Sora's heart we haven't even gotten to. But despite all of that.
Who's that, man?
Ventus.
Get out of there, Ventus.
He, despite all of the craziness that it can be hard to tell people about sometimes when they don't know the franchise, it still comes down to the fact of, like, it is about friendship and it's about the magic of that. And
simple,
I think that's still powerful.
Clean.
Yes.
Also, you see the Fast and Furious films because people think they're about cars, but they're not.
It's
they're
about family.
Friendship.
Yeah. In Dragon Ball Z, everyone thinks that Goku's power is to blow up a planet or shoot fire from his hands, but really, he befriends people.
Oh.
And then he challenges them to things.
To battles.
Yeah. Yeah. Jonathan, you're going to have a lot more on Kingdom Hearts this week, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a Rewind Theater that should be up by now of the those two trailers, and we also have a few more follow-up pieces.
So if you want to see just a wealth of Kingdom Hearts content, follow Jonathan on Twitter at JMDornbush.
Yeah, ask me any question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go on many tweets about
it. How long will it take me to beat Kingdom Hearts 2?
I put like Ooh. I think I put 85 hours.
You can put a lot.
I've restarted that game twice already.
Yeah,
it's really
but
good.
That was like when I was a kid, and then
it's really good.
And then I was just like, oh, I gotta finish this. And then
if you mainline it, probably 30-ish hours.
You like grind through 85 hour RPGs in no time. You know,
that's true.
Yeah, you keep playing Mass Effect.
Or if we can do
leave
it
me
for
alone.
I'm not shaming
I didn't
you.
Start my fourth time. No, it's fine.
I put 100 hours in Persona. And that's fine.
I have well over 1,000 hours in Dota.
So many hours.
What, did you ever find out what happens at the end there? What's the ending of Dota?
That's why they're ancient. They weren't ancients. You were it was Dota. You were defending the youths originally.
All right,
Dodi.
So on the subject of you know, cool games where you run around and there's cartoon characters in them. It's a video game podcast. What do you want? Ni No Kuni 2.
Yeah,
the Revenant Kingdom
has nothing to do with the film Revenant, which is about the bear and the man. But I got to play about 4 hours of Revenant Kingdom the other day, and it wasn't directly from the beginning. It was like 2 hours. That's like an hour into the game, and then some stuff further on. And as someone who really liked the original Ni No Kuni, I was a little bit worried because Studio Ghibli is no longer involved in this one, which was like part of the main draw of the original. You're like, oh my god, the people who made Princess Mononoke and Howl's Moving Castle are making this game. But after playing it, it's totally sort of calmed my fears. This game has a couple things going on with it, which I absolutely love. Bless you, Miranda.
Thank you.
One is the battle system is incredible. The battle system is this real-time, super chaotic mix of like the Tales games, like Tales of Symphonia, a little bit of Final Fantasy XV, and weirdly enough, Pikmin.
What?
So if you're noticing,
sign me up.
So
that's where, I'm so drawn in by that.
So you don't have your familiars this time around, which was sort of the original game had like a Pokemon-esque system where you'd catch enemies and they would
so good,
and you'd level them up and everything. But in this one, you find these little, like if you're watching this clip, there's these little green dudes and there's these little creatures that you find and they sort of adhere to certain elemental properties, and you equip them in your party, and then they exist on the battlefield and sort of run around.
Are they called like Pinkies or
Definitely don't think they're called Keflings. But you run up to a group and you can activate them on the battlefield. Like you can't do it via menu. You have to physically interact with them, and some of them will form a healing ring. And as long as you guys are in that healing ring, you're constantly being healed. Some will form a dome that will protect you from fire damage. Some will just turn into a cannon and start like firing at enemies who are running away. And so it totally does feel like in the way that like in Pikmin, you're like, all right, I'm going to throw 1,000 of you at this bad guy, and you're all going to jump on him. Like, it feels like that's happening in the same time that you're doing this real-time combat where, you know, every strike feels like a strike because you're hitting the button. And also, your two AI companions are smart and are they don't want to die. And so they're actually, like, benefiting you. And you can pop between characters on the fly and everything.
It's a treat.
Yeah. And so, like, that was the thing is immediately, like, I love the battle system.
Oh, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, it's totally cool. And then the, you know, Ghibli's not involved anymore, but the game is clearly still gorgeous. It's super pretty. The characters are really charming. They're really different. You come across, like, in the 4 hours I spent, like, I came across this, like, weird group of sky pirates who all sounded Australian. And I went to this, like Chinese-inspired casino town that was everything was done via gambling and, like, and craps. And so, like, they, like, they appease their god and, like, hold summons in court by just throwing dice. And like that's and I ended up getting a debt in the town, and Whoa. The debt is a bird on your shoulder that just screams that you have a debt. And the deeper your debt gets, the fatter the bird gets.
That sounds awesome.
I know. Wow. So it's the stuff, and that's the stuff that felt like Ghibli.
Yeah.
That felt like, fat Australian sky pirates, and then this town that has like a manifestation of your debt via this bird. That's really cool. That stuff was cool. And then the last, this is my manifesto. And then the final thing that I thought was really cool was the big variety of gameplay, which included the titular Revenant Kingdom, which is you building your town. So you are like sort of a deposed prince who is, and it has this kind of like.
Is your dad a cat?
Cloud. Yeah, your dad's always a cat, right?
I mean,
maybe.
You know. But isn't he like, aren't you like the grandson of King Tom from the first
one? I think you are, yeah. So I didn't get a lot of the, I'm assuming when the game starts, it shows you how this is related to the original.
I heard like it's mostly unrelated. Like you could probably just jump into this one without having played the first, which is the appeal for me, because I didn't get to play
the first. A big question. Yeah, that's literally the opposite of Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
sorry, but the original had like a modern-ish day element to it. If you remember, like you were a kid and his mom died, and like you got into an accident, and that's how you transported to what was it called? Ding Dong Alley?
Ding Dong Dell, yeah.
Ding Dong Dell.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with the first one was it did have that, like, it had that.
It's right next to Diagon.
Like, your entrance in that universe was like this kid from real life who's like, oh, here, you get sucked in there. And it felt very like, I felt like that was kind of like a good like touchstone, you know?
Yeah, like,
kind of
like, oh, you are my avatar. Yeah.
For this to just be thrown into this fantasy world, I don't know why that's weird. For if it had just been like that since day one, I would have been like, yeah, whatever, it's fine, you know, that's normal for this series. But for this to kind of be like almost untethered from that is weirdly disconcerting for me.
Yeah, but we don't know. Like one, I think while we were at the thing, Alana saw things she wasn't supposed to see because they didn't set her thing up properly. So I think there's still some of that stuff there.
She just watched the final cutscene.
She watched,
yeah.
You see that interview? Someone did an interview with Paul Rudd and straight up just asked, his question was, how does Infinity War end? And Paul Rudd was like, what? He's like, yeah, how does it end? And he's like, I've been doing this for years and you're not even being coy. And he's like, yeah, I realize people never answer that question. So I'm just going to start asking, like, how does the movie end?
That's a pretty good
question.
Because
like one out of 30 people might accidentally just be like, oh, Thanos kills Iron Man.
I've occasionally done joke questions like that in interviews. Yeah. It like helps throw people off a little bit.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Why do you want to throw Paul Rudd off?
Are you doing a red light? What color is the White House?
Ooh,
cow
yellow.
Who's buried in Lincoln's tomb?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, cool. So anyway, Ni No Kuni 2, Revenant Kingdom.
Yeah, comes out next month. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't need to have the two there. It's the same universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're, it's like SEO things, right?
Yeah.
Which sucks. It's like you have to distinguish this one from the other,
if
aside
were,
from
brand recognition.
I mean, if they were at all concerned with brand recognition, they probably wouldn't have called it Ni No Kuni day one.
Well, you're going to remember that, right?
I still like Ninu Nanu.
Ninu
Nanu.
It took me probably a year to figure out what the name of the series was. I sort of reviewed the first one. I did, like, we had a freelancer who's Miguel Concepcion, is over at GameSpot now. He played through the whole game. We kind of like put our heads together after I'd played like, I don't know, 10, 20 hours or something, and was like, how do you feel? Does this kind of reflect how you feel about it? Like, here's what happens. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I think, you know, we both agreed that we liked it, but he did kind of the legwork there, which I felt weird about because everything else I'd actually
played
myself.
Does Ni No Kuni mean something? Is it like short for something?
It means, damn it, I used to know
Night
this.
Nonsense Kunichiwa.
Absolutely not.
Oh, boy.
What?
No, but it means it does. Nope. Miranda, what does it mean? You know some Japanese, right?
Yeah, but I don't know what this means.
I know.
Doki Doki is a heartbeat. It's the sound of like the pitter patter of a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when you start to say something, but then you burp. That's what Ni No Kuni means.
Ni No Kuni also sounds like, what's the National Writers Novel Month?
NaNoWriMo.
Yeah. That's very different.
Yeah. From that, yeah.
Well, it's sort of similar.
Yeah, I'm happy we're getting pretty games in this series. I was actually really worried about it as an IP because the first one had a 3DS game that never got localized, and then it was a PS3 exclusive during, you know, the PS3 era, which was, you know,
oftentimes the doldrums.
Yeah, I hope we get a remaster of the first one still. I think that'd be really nice.
That'd have been a smart thing to release, like, last month.
It had a little, it had one of the little animals was like a Totoro, but he had like pants on and bat wings.
You know who I didn't like? Good. You know who I didn't like? Drippy. I didn't like Drippy in his nose.
That was quite a contest in the office last week about that.
A lot of people really like Drippy in his nose. Right. I was anti Drippy. Drippy was your main dude and he had a nose, but it was just like long.
Oh. Yeah.
You think Drippy's in this one? Did Drippy die?
I hope not. I don't want that man in my party at all.
I'm not crazy about him.
Yeah,
I don't know. I turned the Japanese audio on and it made it a whole lot better because I didn't like his voice. I didn't like that man.
Sometimes that helps.
Yeah. There are a lot of little cats in that game. That was a good time. Yeah. Anyway, so Valentine's Day is tomorrow, probably, depending on when you're listening to this. So we figured we'd go over some games to play with a significant other.
Well, I don't know why you said it like that.
Significant other.
That sounds like something in Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
Who's Sora's significant other?
Roxas.
Yeah. Like that's like a summon or something.
Yeah.
Like
just, yeah. But no, I want to throw this in here just because, yes, it is Valentine's Day this week, and a lot of people are always like, what's a good game to play with someone who might not oftentimes play games, or just what's a good game for couples to play together?
You wrote here, what games are good to play with a kissing pal?
Mm-hmm.
The third bullet point list is astounding.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I'm going to guess, Miranda, you wrote Dota 2?
Yeah, you got to have good, like, lane synchronization.
No, anyway. I thought it was really cute when you said that you and Brian are lane partners.
Yeah, so like me and my significant other like often lane together. Like he plays a safe lane carry and I play the safe lane support. And so when you're supporting a carry early game, like that's really important because like you need to make sure they get their farms, so they can grow up big and strong and protect you later because you're strong when you're support early. And so I was like, yeah, you gotta be in good sync and understand each other and have good communication.
That's the thing is like communication is key in a relationship. Yeah. And so something like that. I know a bunch of people play Overcooked.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to get the fight.
Which okay. is, or it's a good way to succeed and be like, maybe we could cook well together.
Yeah, now, maybe. Yeah. Let us try that, I guess.
Just
yeah.
decide,
it's a
though.
Good way to end
yeah. You also wrote zombies?
Yeah, so like Call of Duty zombies. Like if you want to go play some Nazi zombies, like that's a fun, tense thing where you can like work together with somebody. Like you could just do two player and see how long it lasts.
You ever Left 4 Dead?
Yeah.
I feel like Left 4 Dead would have been a good one. They stopped making those games.
I also threw on Undertale because there's love in that. Yeah.
Should have a game of love in it.
Great image. Yeah, so there's the thing is, like, a lot of times when I think of playing something with my significant other, it's like, oh, I got to find a co-op game, right? I found that I almost more enjoy playing single-player campaigns. Like, we play Mass Effect together. Like, that's how I experienced it for the first time was with my significant other. And we play it through the entire time.
I'm totally with you on that. I think it's so much more fun. I think, like, something like Until Dawn is really fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, totally. It's a matter of discussing your choices rather than just arguing about who's not cooking or shooting or whatever.
Yeah. Then it's, like, a nice break, too, to, like, hand off the controller for a little bit and, like, just watch a bit. Because it's, like, yeah, I've played a lot. I'm getting a little tired. But, like, I don't want this to stop.
Sure.
It's, like, all right, then we trade.
I've been doing that with Persona with my significant other, where it would help like with the choices and things and teach me who to kiss in the game, not just in real life.
Ooh.
You've been kissing on?
Yeah, you know.
Wait.
But also maybe cheating a little bit.
No!
Oh, no! Right.
Okay. Lady on!
Okay.
Perhaps.
Yeah. I put Nidhogg on here. Nidhogg is just a disgusting, brutal game, but I had like a good time playing with my fiance. It's like, you know, you stab each other, rip each other's guts out, and throw stuff, and she'll do these squeaks, and then it's just like the biggest string of swear words you've ever heard. Small woman. And yeah, it's a good time. Also, I don't think this is coming to PS4. I really hope it is. I hope it is. Genital Jousting is a game that's out on Steam right now. We would be showing some footage of it, but that got nixed by the higher-ups. I played this with Brian up at noon. It's
a significant
game,
other.
he's otherly significant. But this is a game about these genitals. They're kind of these nondescript, colorful, sort of these weenies, but they've also got like these little things, and they've got like these funny butt things at the end and little holes in them, and they're just these like they're like Nerf genitals, you know?
Yeah.
And
are the butt things testicles?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know what they're going for with that. But this game's got like a party mode. It's got a co-op thing where you do all kinds of awful stuff. And there's also like a surprisingly adorable like story mode where you play as these genitals trying to go through day-to-day life and do stuff like, oh, you know, put on clothes or walk a dog or eat your lunch. You don't want to know how they do that.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, if you're looking for a laugh and, I don't know, mom doesn't have parental controls turned on your computer, look up Genital Jousting. I hope it comes to PS4. I really do, because I will have that at every party that I throw at my awful house. Now, the next person is an insane person. Ooh. I don't know who wrote this. Here are games to play with a significant other. If you want to break up with them, Yu-Gi-Oh, Uno, Clue, Candyland, Quidditch, and the PC port of FF7.
Was that Barrett?
Who wrote that?
I'm pretty sure that was Barrett.
Was that Barrett?
Yeah, yeah,
waving. Barrett and I played Quidditch together, so.
Yeah. Wait, did you just, like, run outside?
No, the Quidditch World Cup for the PS2.
There's many versions of Quidditch. Like, there's a board game, too. Like, I remember I had one when I was a kid. Like, my parents got me, like, a box full of Harry Potter stuff. Just, like, games and, like, Uno but it's Harry Potter and Lego sets and a Quidditch board game.
A board game of a sport is weird. That'd be like, it was baseball the board game.
Yeah.
I had like a futuristic football board game.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, anyway. I would literally rather rob a liquor store than play Uno with my significant other.
Uno's fun.
Like Simpsons Uno?
Yeah. playing Uno against like someone I hated with my significant other is one thing, but I think if it was just the two of us, it's like, why not just skip it and just do hard drugs and hit each other? That's just not good. For
that is, was the skip thing a joke? Like reverse?
Like a skip? Yeah.
Draw four.
That's like a playing that game as an adult. You're just like, why would you do this to each other?
I like Uno.
It's great. It's awesome.
Really?
It's wonderful.
Yeah, I do. I like Uno a lot.
I like
also,
Uno.
Also, remember
lot
when Uno was released on Xbox Live and then it just turned into like a porn thing?
Because
randomly, like, so you could play Uno with your camera.
It was like one of the first.
Oh,
and it would just be a thing. Like, you would log into a game and you would see something naked. someone's body naked.
Rocco.
I totally remember playing it and just being like, "This is impossible. Like, I can't do this anymore because, it's great.
Wow.
Uno's a game I haven't played in a long time. I just feel like there's usually shouting whenever I've tried to.
I think Uno's. We're gonna play Uno soon.
It'd be weird to play with one other person though.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want to play with one person?
Yeah.
Because then you're like, oh, Uno, and then they just stare at you while you put your cards down. You're like, oh, yeah, back to me.
It's awkward. Oh, they get through that.
You're like,
people.
I already lost. What do you want?
Yeah.
And then Marty, of course, you wrote Catherine and Lego games.
Catherine, to me, and the same thing Miranda was saying about how certain single player games really work. I played stuff like Catherine and The Last of Us and Until Dawn and Metal Gear, like something that's really story based that, like, if one of you doesn't play a lot of games, like you can handle the heavy lifting of the mechanics, and then you can both enjoy the stories and the choice making. And then Lego games, I think, are just some of the most fun two-player cooperative games.
Yeah.
Especially for anyone that's like, I'm interested in this property, whether it be Harry Potter or Marvel or Jurassic Park or Indiana Jones or Pirates.
Yeah, I've been doing Lego Marvel 2 with my girlfriend. Nice. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. Yeah.
Lego Marvel 1 is so good.
Yeah.
I forgot an important one.
What?
Hottiful Boyfriend.
Hottiful Boyfriend.
I almost put that on there.
Yeah, you can play those singing together.
Choose
which
bird. Sexy birds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Play it a lot, though.
You think it's sexy birds, but then it turns into much more.
Yeah, it's a lot more. It's
very dark.
Keep playing.
It's an upsetting game about the birds. Or so it seems.
Yeah.
That's what you think. You think you're just going to smooch some birds and then it's real scary.
The owls are not what they seem.
You get into good conversations about the beaks and the logistics of kissing with a beak.
Yeah,
it seems, put on that final scene.
Kissing with beaks seems violent.
I just think of that final scene in Billy Madison with Chris Farley and he's kissing that penguin.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
I think about that a lot.
Yeah, if you can't tell, our show has come to an end, kind of. We ran out of things to talk about, and that's why we're evoking the image of kissing a big bird. Real quick, before we round things up, Marty and I both kind of have some announcements to make.
We're pregnant.
We're pregnant with podcasts.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
We are both, you and Alana and Brian and I are both separately launching brand new side podcast, totally separate from IGN that we figured to plug here.
Yeah.
Yours is called Red Lips Orange Car.
Yeah.
What is it?
And it is a relationship advice / comedy / storytelling podcast set around the weird world of Craigslist misconnections. And so every week or every other week, it's going to be Alana and I, and then a rotating third, which is a bunch of folks you've seen on the show before. I'm sure everyone who's on this panel will be on eventually. And we find a strange Craigslist misconnection from somewhere in the world, and we read it out, and we either try to give legitimate relationship advice or tear it apart or make fun of it or talk about how it somehow relates to our lives or create a weird story about it. The episodes we've recorded so far with folks like Jared and Zach Ryan and Anthony Carboni have been just wonderful.
Sweet.
We're debuting on Valentine's Day.
Let me come on there. I actually have a success story from a Craigslist misconnection.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Stranger than it sounds.
Was it Jen?
No.
Oh. I was just wondering.
No. That would be really weird. But Brian and I are launching a new thing called Weird Heat, which is considerably less digestible of an elevator pitch. It's at the very basis, it's going to be a biweekly show about life and creativity and everything else. It's pretty much all the sort of serious stuff that we occasionally touch on the Comedy Button and all of the more artsy, fartsy, whimsical, emotional stuff that we don't talk about on Up at Noon because we're busy shooting each other with Nerf guns. So it's kind of a more, for lack of a better word, mature, grown-up approach to things. Mm-hmm. So each episode is a very singular topic. The first episode is about optimism and how that is a difficult thing to do
in 2018.
Life. But on top of that, Brian's also producing new music and I'm making new art. And it's basically kind of it's a catch-all for things we want to be making but don't have a place to put them. So it's a place for us to finish projects and work on things.
That's awesome.
I listened to the first episode today, and there's a cool thing at the end.
Hot exclusive that I don't think enough people have checked out. So just head to youtube.com/weirdheat or look on iTunes or
it's the Kingdom Hearts 3 release.
That's weird that you guys got that exclusively.
That's awesome.
Well, it's kind of close.
Well, you've been making that weird face earlier, right?
It's really not an accessible series. They decided to bury their release date in the first episode of a podcast that is hard to explain. Yeah. But yeah, we're also on Patreon, patreon.com/weirdheat. And Red Lips Orange Car is just
RLOC podcast.
RLOC podcast.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And then Miranda, you're now a regular on Podcast Unlocked.
Yeah. Surprise.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I feel like weird.
Why?
Being on here now that you said that.
Why? That's fine. I've was on those two shows for like 5 years.
Yeah. Barrett, change all the colors to green quickly.
your hair matches PlayStation better, so you're good here. Podcast
unlocked.
No, I'm a regular now, which is very exciting. Obviously, if you know any of my work, I play pretty much everything, but I have most of my background in Xbox. It's kind of what I grew up with. Like I said, or I don't know if I said it, but the reason I bought a PS2 was to play Kingdom Hearts. And then that came very late in the generation. Yeah. So while I do know some like PlayStation stuff, obviously, because I play like, a little bit of everything, but Xbox is kind of my older background. Nice. So yeah, it's been good. And then working on a bunch of wiki stuff.
Nice.
Basic updates. I reviewed that Call of Duty DLC, and that's kind of all I've got going on right now. I think we're putting up an anime feature soon. Yeah, anime.
Nice.
Yeah, anime. So,
yeah, tell awesome. You about to watch the season.
Nice. Jonathan?
I feel like I should have a big project announcement to make, but I don't.
You're doing the Thousand Kingdom Hearts. Yeah, start your Kingdom Hearts show, finally.
Yeah, I probably should. Also,
sweatshirt some more.
Yeah, that'll just do a new photo shoot. I have made several agreements to write television shows with some of our coworkers, so look forward to those projects in a few years. Yep, one's with Barrett. Barrett and I have a TV show working.
And for more on Barrett, I don't know, he's in there. He's
in the control. He's in the camera.
For those of you just listening to the audio of this, I'm so sorry. I don't know what to tell you. If you want to see what the hell is going on,
fun lights,
there's dramatic lighting. There's B-roll with footage of the PlayStation menu in it. There's Barrett. There's really just a lot of stuff going on. So head to youtube.com/IGNBeyond and please go subscribe. We've got Q&A stuff, off-topic nonsense, rapid-fire questions, Let's Plays, Horse Apples. We'll also be we're going to start streaming to that platform channel thing. They made a special different room for streaming games at IGN. You know, the thing that people like to do on the computer. So we're going to give that a shot. Take that for a spin. See what it's like when the games are there to play. Just end the show, Barrett. It's over. Anyway, you can find us all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Marty's McBiggity. Miranda is Havoc. I always forget. You and your sister.
Rose.
Yeah. Havoc Rose. Havoc with a K. And Jonathan is J.M. Dornbush. You can tweet at him about Kingdom Hearts stuff. If you have stuff to say about Kingdom Hearts, please don't tweet it at me. I'm very frightened for that fan base. Because one time I said something that wasn't entirely nice, and they got very vicious at me. And I was like, I'm very scared of that fan base. I don't know what I'm thinking of it. Why is Mickey wearing the pants? The game is very just upsetting on every level.
You sound like you're on a nervous first date.
I don't know what to do. So why are the animals there? And they're doing stuff with the toys and the monsters. Anyway, that was this episode's of the show. The week is over. I'm tired. Let's end the show. Barrett, push stop, please.
Beyond.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.